Yes, sir.
Okay, do you wish to reserve any time for rebuttal?
5 minutes, please.
All right, you may begin.
Thank you. Your Honor, my name is Jennifer Newman. I am an attorney representing Latoya Wilson in an appeal from the Circuit Court of the City of Richmond. And the matter that's before the court today is whether or not the stop of the vehicle that Ms. Wilson was in as a passenger violated her right against unreasonable search and seizure under the Fourth Amendment. And so ultimately the issue is whether or not the officer had reasonable articulable suspicion to actually stop the car. I think it's clear from the record, even from my brief and the brief of the Commonwealth, that we all agree that Officer Fernandez testified that he did stop the car because the car made a left-hand turn without using the turn signal. Officer Fernandez also testified that when the car Ms. Wilson was in did that, it did not impede the progress of some vehicles that were traveling westbound, which would have been the traffic that they would have crossed over when they made the left turn. And Officer Fernandez also said he was the only car besides the car Wilson was in that was traveling eastbound.
Ms. Newman, this is Judge Petty. Is there any question as to whether or not this is a traffic infraction, or do you agree that it is?
I do not concede in this case that the facts would warrant that this is a traffic violation.
I understand that, but if there were a violation of 46.2-848, that would be a traffic infraction.
Yes, I do agree with that.
Thank you.
Going along with that question, 46.2-848 obviously requires that individuals that are driving use their turn signal if that their turn is the language that the statute uses, may affect the progress of other vehicles. And I think that's why
Newman,
it's important to...
Ms. Newman, this is Judge Fields. Why wouldn't it have affected the officer's vehicle since it was only 1 to 2 car lengths behind the vehicle in which appellant was a passenger when no turn signal was used?
Judge, I think when you look at this case and when you look at it from an objective perspective, the officer testified essentially that his car was not affected. I think specifically appendix page 18, his response was to a question, did that turn make you have to stop or brake or anything like that? And his answer to that was no. Right, I guess it was correct based on the way the question was framed. So he testified specifically that it did not affect it, and he was 1 to 2 car lengths behind. He was the only other car behind them, and his testimony was that the car went from the left-hand lane to the far left-hand lane and made a left-hand turn.
Counsel, this is Judge Alston. Is the standard that we have to look at is whether or not the officer was affected or could be affected by the actions of your client?
Judge, may be affected, I think, is the standard, not whether or not he, in fact, was. But I draw that to the court's attention because I think that, you know, the Commonwealth relies on the trial court's comments that his car could have been affected because he was behind them. And I think this court has the authority to look at whether or not that was an erroneous evaluation of the facts that were before the court. So while it is a may affect rather than did affect standard the court has to look at, I think in the case that you have before you, the testimony is that it did not affect and would not have affected. He was behind him 1 to 2 car lengths. It was a simple maneuver from the left lane to the far left lane, crossing over oncoming traffic, and no one was affected by it, and the officer didn't testify anyone would have been.
Ms. Judge Penny, I want to ask you about that. You said mentioned oncoming traffic. Am I correct? This is a two-way highway.
Correct, eastbound, westbound, yes, sir.
And that wasn't there some testimony that there were vehicles coming from the opposite direction of the appellant?
Yes, Officer Fernandez testified that there were vehicles traveling westbound. I don't think that he provided any more specific testimony as to how far away or how many.
Well, if one is turning left across oncoming traffic, why wouldn't that turn in and of itself possibly affect oncoming traffic?
Judge, I think there are certainly scenarios where it could, and there are certainly scenarios where it couldn't. In this case, unfortunately, I think the facts just are not sufficiently presented to the trial court to present that they would have been affected. We have absolutely no idea how far away those vehicles were or how many there were. we just have Officer Fernandez's testimony that the turn did not affect them in any way.
But the test is not whether it did interfere with oncoming traffic, but whether it may have affected oncoming traffic.
That is correct. Not disputing that. I think, unfortunately, though, from the historical factual perspective, the facts in this case do not support a finding that it may have affected. What you have is a testimony that there were cars, using the plural, traveling westbound when the left-hand turn was made, and that there was one car traveling behind. And that's the extent of the testimony that was presented to the trial court. Based on that, and the fact that the statute does allow, apparently, unbeknownst to me at the time, it does allow, apparently, to make a turn without using a turn signal, if it's not going to affect the impeding traffic. And so I think since that is the sole basis for Officer Fernandez's stop, I think the historical facts that were presented to the trial court in this case do not support a finding that there was a reasonable articulable suspicion that 46.2-848 was violated.
Ms. Newman, the trial court made a factual finding otherwise, as you know, saying, I agree with the Commonwealth that Officer Fernandez's car alone coming in behind Ms. Wilson's vehicle in the left turn lane is a sufficient presence of another vehicle that may be affected by the turning vehicle to require the turning vehicle to give a turn signal under the statute.
Mm-hmm.
That's a factual finding. How can we say that's plainly wrong, particularly if the officer was only 1 to 2 car lengths behind her? It's not like he was a block or two behind her.
Judge,
Your Honor, I'm sorry to interrupt. I was disconnected from the call. I apologize.
Oh, Mr. Katz, how long have you been off the phone?
It's about 3 minutes. I don't know why our phone system has gone dead here, but I was unable to dial back in from our office phone.
Okay.
I apologize.
I don't know. That's not your. Is there any question whether we should proceed? We can proceed, okay? I don't know that you missed all that much.
I feel confident in proceeding, and I will rely on the court to ask me any questions that may have been raised by counsel that may need me to respond to.
Okay.
I feel comfortable going forward.
Sorry for the technical snafu. Ms. Newman, you want to proceed?
Yes, sir. I think in response to the most recent question about whether or not this court can find that the trial court plainly erred in finding that the officer's car may have been affected, what I will say to that, Your Honors, is that when the court reviews the findings of the trial court, the court does have the ability to find error if it's plainly wrong. And in this case, the court has to look at the evidence that was actually presented, which is the reason that I brought it up, that on appendix page 18, Officer Fernandez was specifically asked if his car was affected, and the answer was no. And so I don't believe that the trial court's finding is supported by the facts in this case. I think it was conjecture and not supported by the facts in the case. And I think that's the reason why whether or not the car was actually affected is important.
Ms. Newman, are you in agreement that as the question as to whether the operation of any other vehicle might have been affected, are you agreeing that that's a factual finding, or is that a mixed finding?
That's a mixed finding. Whether or not 46.2-848 was violated, I believe is a mixed finding.
But what about the question of whether there were operation of any other vehicle might have been affected. Is that factual, or
that question alone, I believe, is factual.
Okay.
So to follow up,
what it is.
So basically, the what I just read to you a moment ago about the trial court saying that Officer Fernandez's car alone coming in behind Ms. Wilson's vehicle in the left turn lane is sufficient presence of another vehicle. Would you agree that's a factual finding in and of itself that we have to find?
I agree it's a factual finding. I believe it's plainly wrong because it's not supported by the evidence that was actually before the trial court.
So the fact that the officer said, I didn't have to brake, I mean, I think they asked him the question. He says no. Well, correct. He says correct. That he didn't have to stop or brake or anything like that. He says correct. That's enough to overcome the trial court's
believe it is because it's the only testimony. The specific question was, your vehicle, you testified your vehicle was a few car lengths behind. Do you recall testifying that there were no cars in between your vehicle and that their vehicle did not make you stop or brake or anything like that? And his answer was correct. And that was absolutely the only testimony regarding Officer Fernandez's car in relation to the turn that was made by the car Wilson was in.
All right. You are into your rebuttal. You can continue if you wish. You can reserve the remainder.
Judge, I'm going to reserve the remainder. Thank you.
Yes.
Good morning. May it please the Court, I'm Benjamin Katz, appearing on behalf of the Commonwealth. On appeal, the defendant focuses upon whether the evidence deduced at the suppression proceeding established a need to signal the lane change in accordance with 46-2848 in the first instance. And I would suggest that this is a flawed premise because it fails to take into account both the language employed by the statute and the objective standard that must be employed in analyzing whether a Terry stop is supported by the requisite reasonable suspicion. And if I could turn to the language of 46-2848, in selecting the language employed there, the General Assembly evinced an intent that signals should be employed whenever a vehicle may be affected. And the defendant's argument, if credited, would require reading the may language out of the statute so that the statute would be applied as if written whenever a vehicle is affected. And I would argue that doing so would violate both the plain language of the statute and the canons of statutory construction.
As you read it, it sounds like it's a kind of a strict liability that you must signal every time you make a turn.
Well, I wouldn't go quite that far, Your Honor, but I would suggest an objective officer in the shoes occupied by the officer in this case could reasonably have suspected a violation of the statute. And I know counsel points to the officer's testimony that his car was not affected, but I would suggest that's a different question. Whether his car was affected is not relevant for resolving this inquiry. It's could an objective officer have believed that his car may have been affected? And so it's not strict liability, but you know, it's easy to imagine a number of circumstances in which a car may be affected.
Mr. Katz, you kind of lost me there. Is it the officer's perspective or is it the fact finder's perspective as to whether a car may have been affected by the circumstances presented?
No, it is the fact finder. It is an objective person faced with the circumstances that the officer faced. So, no, we don't care what the officer thinks.
So you're not suggesting it's what the officer's perspective is. It's what a reasonable fact finder would say the perspective should be.
Absolutely. And I'm sorry.
Mr. Katz, that sounds like you're raising that as a de novo review as opposed to a factual finding.
No, I would suggest that it is a factual finding that's part of the de novo application of the statute. And I think in response to the question you asked opposing counsel, how do we deal with that particular part of it? Is it a factual question or not? I think it's not dissimilar to, you know, when construing the concealed weapon statute and the question of whether is it a dirk, dagger, buoy, or weapon of like kind. Well, that's a factual inquiry that's part of the analysis of applying the statute. And I think it's the same here. I mean, there's a factual inquiry that goes into it from the point of view of an objective fact finder as the court goes through the process of applying the law. So I think it is a factual finding. Right? It's a mixed question of law and fact as to how we apply 46-2848. But here, you know, whether any vehicle was in fact affected is not the question. It's can an objective person have reasonably concluded that the car may have been affected? And given the close proximity of the officer's cruiser, that's not an unreasonable suspicion. You know, if we change the facts and we have the car traveling down a road at night and the officer is, you know, a half mile down the road, well, that's a very different analysis, and that makes it less reasonable. But the close proximity in these circumstances would mean that objectively, you could reasonably suspect a violation of the statute.
You're agreeing that there has to be some other car on the road that conceivably could have been impacted by a turn without a signal.
Certainly, and I think as we move whatever car that is farther away from the turn, it becomes less and less reasonable. So you can clearly imagine a scenario where, you know, it's objectively unreasonable to stop for that violation because any traffic was simply too far away to be affected. But those aren't the facts here. and I would argue that it was reasonable to stop. And to that end, I would ask this court to affirm the trial court's determination.
Mr. Katz, this is Judge Beals. I have a two-part question, if you'll bear with me. The first part is the Simon of Error talks about reasonable articulable suspicion to stop the car, to do a Terry stop, to further investigate. But if you stop the car, what are you further investigating? You already know whether there are vehicles around, the police car, the oncoming traffic. The officer knows she didn't put on her turn signal. That's not even debated before us. So what would be, why is it reasonable articulable suspicion? What further investigation or questions would be asked related to whether she put on her turn signal or not?
Well, in under these specific facts, there wouldn't be further investigation as to the facts of the suspected violation. I suppose the purpose of the stop in this case would be to ascertain the driver's information and then go through the process of issuing a summons if you believed you had probable cause.
That's part of my question. Is there probable cause here in addition to reasonable articulable suspicion that the statute was violated?
I think there is, but I think that's sort of secondary to the inquiry here in resolving the assignment of error. And if I could step back to get to your first question, I think in the larger constitutional sense, if we change the offense for which the objective person suspects has been violated, there may very well be additional investigation that's necessary and authorized by the stop. But in this particular instance, this particular offense, that's not necessary. I mean, all the necessary facts of the offense itself are provided by seeing it. But that's not to say that there isn't additional investigation that's needed and is authorized by the stop, and that would be to find out particularly who is the driver.
I guess my question is...
You would concede, though, this was a pretextual stop, would you not?
Well, it might have been subjectively pretextual in the eyes of the officer, but again, I don't think that resolved the inquiry before this court.
I agree, but he didn't stop the car because he wanted to investigate whether the turn signal worked or not.
Well, I think based on the evidence we have in the record, that is a fair assessment. But again, I would just emphasize to this court, whatever the subjective intent was, is sort of beyond whether the Constitution authorized what happened. And I would argue objectively that it certainly did.
Well, and I guess I should follow up further on the probable cause then. If there's probable cause that she violated the statute, why does it really matter? If there's probable cause, you can stop the vehicle and ask additional questions, do all sorts of things, where then, of course, the smell of the marijuana and the rest of what happened becomes immediately apparent. I guess, obviously, the assignment of error says reasonable articulable suspicion, but probable cause is a higher standard. Why wouldn't we look at that? Why wouldn't that resolve the matter? I guess it's where I'm at.
I think it would, and I can only respond why the Commonwealth doesn't make that argument more forcefully, and I think it's because if we're talking about a suspicion and may affect, that's a very different analysis than probable cause that it may affect. And I think it's, as it should be, a more strenuous standard, and it's harder to satisfy, I would suggest. And so I was unwilling to push the court in that direction because I think the narrowest ground for deciding this case is to analyze whether one could reasonably suspect that it may be affected. And to say that it probably may have affected seemed like a more difficult question to answer and perhaps one not necessary for the court to answer.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Any further questions? Thank you very much, Mr. Katz.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Judges, very briefly, I would just to kind of touch upon some of what was discussed and commented on, I would just draw the court's attention to Murphy versus Commonwealth 9, Virginia, Appellate 139. It's a 1989 case. When a court reviews, this court in particular, whether an officer had reasonable suspicion to make an investigatory stop, it must view the totality of the circumstances and view those facts objectively through the eyes of a reasonable police officer with the knowledge, training, and experience of the investigating officer. So I don't believe that it's the reasonableness of the fact finder as stated by opposing counsel. I think it's the reasonableness of a police officer with the appropriate knowledge, training, and experience. And further, I would ask the court to take a look at Lovelace, 37 Virginia.
But counsel, if I could interrupt you, I don't think that's what Mr. Katz was saying. I think what he was saying is the assessment of the reasonableness of the police officer's action, which is left within the province of the fact finder. Do you agree with that premise?
I do agree with that premise, yes. I may have misunderstood. I would also draw the court's attention to Lovelace versus Commonwealth, 37 Virginia Appellate 120. It's a 2001 case. Specifically, in that case, I would draw the court's attention to the fact that appellate courts are bound by the trial court's findings of historical fact unless plainly wrong or without evidence to support them. And as I've argued previously, that's our argument here, is that there is not evidence to support the trial court's finding. And finally, I would draw the court's attention
Let me follow up on that. And I appreciate your argument. Let me follow up on that just a little bit. Suppose we had a situation where there was a car that was following your client, just a regular person driving a car, not a police officer, and your client did not signal in this case, but the person who was following him, who was not a police officer, yeah, I saw that he didn't signal, but it really didn't affect what I needed to do. I just moved over a little bit and slowed down, and everything was fine. If an officer was behind that vehicle that said, oh, it was really no big deal, would there be reasonable articulable suspicion for the officer to pull that person over?
Judge, in that case, I think if the evidence came out in front of the trial court exactly the way you presented it, then yes, there would be. I think if a reasonable police officer who had knowledge, training, and experience could testify that he saw the other car move over in response to someone turning without their turn signal, that alone would support the may effect. But that's not at all what the court has before it today.
What's the difference from a factual standpoint? In other words, in our case, the car did whatever it was going to do in front of the police officer, and in another case, the officer was two cars back. What's the legal significance of that?
Well, Your Honor, the legal significance in the scenario you just provided is that there was another vehicle. And in the factual scenario that you've provided, there was an action that was taken by that vehicle that could be interpreted by a reasonable police officer as a need to avoid or evade action by the car that was turning without the vehicle, without the signal, which is not what you have here. You don't have that third vehicle taking any action. So I think that's the legal significance between the two scenarios. In this case, again, I hate to continue to repeat myself, but the only factual information the court has in this case about the police officer's car is testimony that he's 1 to 2 car lengths behind. However, he also responds in the affirmative to a question, didn't you testify there were no cars between you and them, not giving a distance at all, and that you did not have to stop or brake in any way, shape, or form. And so that's the reason that I do bring that to the court's attention. And again, just by way of analogy, this court has found, and the Supreme Court has found in Bass versus Commonwealth 259 Virginia 470, 2000, that a driver undertaking a lawful driving maneuver which has the effect of avoiding a checkpoint does not, standing alone and without more, furnish reasonable suspicion of possible criminal activity. I would argue that in this case, the driver in this case, who was not Wilson, made a lawful driving maneuver was not necessarily a violation of 46.2-848, and that standing alone didn't furnish reasonable suspicion of additional criminal activity or any criminal activity, and that the facts that was presented before the court is that would not allow a court to find that there was a chance that the officer's car may have been affected by the turn without the signal. We would therefore ask that this court grant our petition.
Thank you very much for your argument, Ms. Newman. We will submit the case, adjourn this call, and adjourn into conference. Thank you.
Thank you, judges.
Thank you, counsel.